This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 279 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy.
Using the Robinhood app doesn't cost anything, and there's no commission fees. One of the things that I've loved about this app is the ability to look back at the stock's growth, not just for a day, but a week, a month, 3 months, or even a year. So you get a real sense of what you're buying into. Now for us, because I wanted to invest in something that was in line with the theme of our podcast, we chose the Royal Bank of Scotland. And literally the instant we made the purchase of the shares through the app, the entire screen was filled with confetti, which for me just upped the excitement level.
Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Robinhood has easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone.
Something else that's great about Robinhood is that you learn by doing. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, and track favorite companies with a personalized newsfeed.
Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at outlander.robinhood.com. That's outlander.robinhood.com. And now it is time for feedback for episode 409, The Birds and the Bees. First up is Amy D.
Hey, Ginger and Summer. It's Amy D with a little bit of feedback on The Birds and the Bees. Aside from the obvious, wonderfully portrayed emotional moments, and there were so many of those, I want to take just a minute to talk about the adaptation process. I thought this episode was a really great example of adapting book to screen. I mentioned part of this in the live after show, but I just really felt like they have condensed storylines, shifted timelines, and used a lot of dialogue to move the story along swiftly. And the pacing of this episode was really good because so much happened. You know, this week they used Bonnet strong-arming Roger back onto the ship to go to Philadelphia as a way for Roger to get the gemstones, which of course is really important. They also used some chimney smoke on the riverbank during that scene when Jamie and Bree were standing overlooking the land. And that showed us the settlers of Fraser's Ridge that we haven't seen before. That was something that I said before this episode. Where are the settlers? Have they gotten any yet? They used a couple of lines from Claire as well to reveal Lizzie's malaria. So much happened in this episode, and yet I really didn't feel like anything was shortchanged. So I felt like maybe for the first time this season, the pacing and the adaptation process were really where they needed to be. Also, Myrta. We all love Myrta. And I will admit to being really happy that they decided to keep this character in the show, but also a little bit concerned about how that was going to affect the story. I'm really not a fan of when they create new things and put them into the story, especially when there's so much that has to be cut out already for time purposes. But what I think really works about the way they have incorporated Myrta into the story is that they have incorporated him into stories that already exist within the Outlander universe. The storyline about the Regulators and the day-to-day of Fraser's Ridge, having Myrta be a part of those storylines that already exist, I think make his continued inclusion in the story work. Anyway, this, of course, is a great episode, probably my favorite one ever, and I can't wait to see what the rest of the season holds.
I have feelings about the way they have been adapting based upon what she had to say. I know they have repeatedly said that Myrta would not be taking over for Duncan Innes.
Innes.
However, the way this week's episode went forward, I feel like they've completely reneged on that. And maybe that's just me, but that's how I felt about it. And I'll go into it more when we get into our chapter discussion. But as much as I love Myrta and how they are adding him into the adaptation, I feel like they are using him to take the place of a character who is no longer part of the episodes.
And next up is a very brief piece of feedback, but it's from someone who I think it's their first time calling, but they didn't leave their name. So I guess another Anon. So let's hear from Anon.
Hi, just leaving a message for episode 9. It was beautiful and lovely for Jamie. His heart was so full of love, it showed on his face. Thank you.
And actually, your voice sounds familiar. So if you have called him before, let us know. And we will try and at least give you credit on social media. Thank you so much. Next up is Autumn.
Hey, ladies. Autumn here from Greenwood, Indiana, calling in for the first time, though I do try to stay active with you guys on social media. This episode. Oh, my gosh. I had so much to say, but I have to tell you, I made a whole list of everything I wanted to talk about, and I've had to condense it down, and I'm already wasting time. So my favorite moments, obviously, Jamie meeting Bree. I got to say, it really touched me when he said, you know, oh, it's my babe. I didn't actually cry the whole episode until maybe the fourth time I watched it, but I have a feeling I might get some tear pricks going over this list. And then obviously Claire's face when she sees Bree already resigned to the fact that she never thought she would see her again, and then just that utter disbelief really touches you. I have to say another one was when they all got to the lookout at Fraser's Ridge, just knowing that he had already stand there once with Claire, and then with Willie, and now again with Bree. I think it's become quite the hot spot for the meeting. And then Jamie watching his bairn sleep. You know, how often do we do that? I know with my own little one, just watching his face when he sleeps and counting his breath and just getting to know his habits. Obviously the hunting scene, when he's calling her my darling and my blessing. If she wasn't a daddy's girl before with Frank, she definitely would have been with Jamie if she had stayed. I really liked the little scene where they were all eating honey together, kind of making their own little hive. And then just Jamie kind of opening up to Claire and, you know, I don't really want her to leave. I'm not ready for her to leave. You know, she called me Da. Oh my goodness. And then, you know, Claire so astute, knowing about the baby before Brianna really even has to say anything, and good on her for being so supportive and being able to draw back on that, you know, that mama's reaction that most moms would have. And just taking it at a doctor's glance. And then obviously the end with Roger. Oh my goodness. I don't know anybody that would have watched that and been like, yeah, no, he deserved that. But oh my gosh. Well, can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about the next week's episode. Can't wait to see the next week's episode. It is going to be a doozy from here on out. Thanks, ladies. Have a great one. Bye.
Thanks, Autumn. You had a lot to say, and I think we're all, Summer and I think both expressed how in love with the last episode we were, and how it is one of our favorites of the entire series. And
have you seen all the memes that have been on the internet this week
about Jamie's pee hands?
No. About Roger.
Oh, how he's missing?
Nah. With the caption of that one time a dude asked for directions.
Oh, gosh. I think I saw one. Yes.
He got his butt handed to him. So, yes. I mean, that could explain why dudes don't ask for directions more. However, it made me chuckle. I don't think it's accurate. However.
Next up is Cindy H.
Hi, this is Cindy from Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm calling about feedback for Birds and the Bees. I'm a book reader and my husband isn't. I've read all the books. We watch the show together and then I listen to your podcast and then I'll watch it again if I like it. It made me laugh when you were talking about Bree bringing the matches, considering that she's gone back to tell her parents about a fire and book readers know what she's doing with matches. And then when Lizzie was flirting with Ian, my husband asks, oh, does she end up with him? And I burst out laughing. And I have already explained to my husband about that situation when I was reading it. And it was a funny situation. Also about Lizzie, when she said, oh, smelling his seed on Bree. My husband asked, well, how would she know, considering she's supposed to be a virgin too? And her father was so upset about her being a concubine. I don't know. I kind of was, I didn't really have an explanation for that other than, I don't know, maybe they had just been on a ship and they had been living in close quarters and she knew what bodily function smelled like. I don't know. That's about it. That's all I had to say. I loved this episode. It was great. I don't know. Love listening to you guys. Bye. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Cindy. Awesome, Cindy. Woo. A few things to look forward to with Miss Lizzie. Next up is Eileen P.
Hi, Ginger and Shimmer. This is Eileen P. from Melville, New York. Here are my comments for Outlander episode 409, The Birds and the Bees. Well, this episode had all the feels between the fabulous acting and amazing music. Oh my gosh, just tear pricks galore. I especially loved when the Brianna and Roger theme intertwined with the Jamie and Claire theme. It was just so beautiful. I mean, Jamie meets Brianna and all is right with the world. I'm so happy that they finally met, you know. It was just so emotional, and the music swelling underneath, it was just gorgeous. Lizzie, I want to be mad at. I want to be mad at her for telling Jamie that Roger raped Bree. I get why she thinks that is true. I mean, there was all the visual that she saw, and then Bree did not tell her about Bonnet. So it led her to believe that it was really Roger that raped her. But besides that, I'm getting to know the character, and, you know, I'm finding her kind of amusing. She described Roger as the man with wanton morals. And yet here's Lizzie blatantly drooling over Ian. And then I remember when Brianna was on the docks after the Gloriana had sailed, and Lizzie comes over, and Brianna made this reference about having talked to Lizzie before about not running because it's not ladylike. Well, I guess Lizzie has to keep reminding how to behave properly. So I am looking forward to watching Lizzie's character develop. And let's see what happens with her. Also talked about, you know, what Frank knew. He comes up in the episode, of course, because he took her camping and taught her how to shoot. And we're wondering whether or not he knew whether she came back to see Jamie and Claire. Well, I like to call what Frank knew frankincense, sense with an S-E-N-S-E, not S-E-N-C-E. But what about not just what Frank knew, but what about what the Reverend Wakefield knew? Did he know Roger went through the stones? I know Roger went by Mackenzie, but I'm just wondering if maybe it was known that Roger went through also. Well, that's it for now. See you next week.
That's interesting.
I feel like Roger's name is so commonplace.
I have no idea. I don't know that it's that common today, but I have absolutely no idea or guess even about its popularity 200 plus years ago.
I just know that given the population of the areas we have been privy to in the series, there are a lot of Mackenzies.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I understand the focus. First of all, Frank was a much more central character than the Reverend, even though he wasn't, you know, Jamie or Claire. He was Claire's first husband, Brianna's dad. He had a huge role in their lives, Brianna and Claire. Even though he's not on the page or not in the series, on screen, as much as the others. So I understand why everyone thinks, and this is totally including myself, I understand why everyone's like, what Frank knew? What Frank knew? And it totally is the most exciting thing to me, the whole thing, which we've all heard ad nauseum.
I mean, but I think that you got way more into what Frank knew when they cast Tobias Menzies. Oh,
well, I got way into Frank. What Frank knew rocked my world before Frank, Tobias Menzies was cast. But we didn't see him as the Frank or anything. What rocked my world, I got more interested in Frank with Tobias Menzies' casting. Diana, unless I'm missing another announcement, the first time and place that Diana mentioned that she'd be writing a book called What Frank Knew was in June 2014 when she was here in Sacramento
at the library, at the Crest Theater, hosted by the Sacramento Library, doing, you know, on her tour for Moby. And she mentioned that, and people were like, oh my God, oh my God. And so that was the first time I had ever heard of it mentioned as something she'd be writing. But the reason, so that was exciting. And I don't know if by that time we'd actually read the book or listened to the book or not. I don't remember. But when I read Moby, and I will not give any spoilers, that's when the shiznit hits the fan and you're like, holy crap, yes, please write this book. Because Moby will break your brain. Break your brain. So, yeah, What Frank Knew didn't really become, people have always wondered about it, and I'm sure others were hot to trot way before I really was woken up to it. But she mentioned the book in June 2014 that she'd be writing one day, and it was after I read Moby.
I feel like the first time she mentioned it, it almost felt like a joke.
I could see that. I could see people thinking that.
Right, but when she said it, we're like, what? That would be amazing. I would love a book like that. And then she was like, oh, crap. Now I have to write that book.
Nah. I think it's going to be not quite a mystery, but because she writes mysteries. She writes a lot of things really well. But I think it's going to be so much. It's going to be so interesting to see how she does it, because if it's from Frank's point of view and not just like a biography of Frank.
But she's also been like super on Frank's team for this whole whatever. And the non-Frank team people have been like, why would you be on Frank's team? He's awful. He did all these things. And she's like, you don't know what Frank knew. And we're like, you're going to tell us what Frank knew?
That's what I'm saying. Next up, Eugenia E.
Hi, this is Eugenia E. from Lexington, Kentucky, with a couple of thoughts about episode 409. This was a very intense episode. From start to finish. As a book reader, I expected everything that happened, but you can't deny that there is something about watching the scenes that you have had in your mind play out on the screen. When I saw Bree, I felt so brokenhearted for her. The helplessness of her situation and the inability to express herself really hurt me. It was very sad watching how she drags herself to bed and then how she starts crying. It really killed me. The scenes of Bree meeting her dad were all that I had pictured in my mind to be. It was beautifully played by both Sam and Sophie, although some people have compared it with the episode A, Malcolm. For me, it is not better or worse. There are obvious parallels between them. But I think Sam, who is the common denominator in both episodes, did an excellent job in both cases, expressing so many feelings at the same time. Tenderness, fragility, surprise, longing, and joy, to name the few. I also loved how Bree lets go and surrenders into her dad's protective arms. Since I do not need to pick one episode over the other, I choose to keep both episodes myself. Thank you guys for all that you do, and until the next one. Bye.
Thank you so much, Eugenia. We, yeah. I hear you. Everyone has a right to absolutely, you know, make their own mind up. And I think I can see reasons for both. Next up is someone I had to name Florida Caller, because I heard that you were from Florida, but I couldn't get your first name.
Hello, Ginger and Summer. Tim Shimmer here. This is Oni calling from Bucaracan, Florida. Dear one listener, first time caller. I'm just going to say this. My favorite part of last episode was Jamie and Bree having their moment. That's all I have to say. It was the best part of the show. Tear breaks. Love you guys. Continue doing what you're doing. Love you guys.
Thank you so much. We still miss your name. Sorry about that. We're happy to give you credit on social media if you email us or tweet us or anything like that. But we got that you're from Florida, and we got that you got in Team Shimmer. That's the important part.
Always.
And next up is Jennifer V.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. This is Jenny V from Wichita, Kansas. Wanted to give you some feedback on episode 409. I love seeing Bree so strong and determined in this episode. These last couple episodes have just been awesome and totally rewatchable. I feel like, you know, Claire and Jamie have their home now. They're together. They love each other. They have hot sex, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. we needed to move the story along. And I think these episodes have just been awesome. When Bree and Jamie finally meet and Bree puts her hand on Jamie's chest, the camera cuts right to her hand to really focus on that. Mm. And it just made me really wonder why they wanted to make such a moment out of that. But it really reminded me of when back in season one, when Frank was standing by the fountain and there was the ghost there, who I think is Jamie, and the ghost just walks right past Frank. But in this, with Bree and Jamie, Bree's able to touch him. Jamie is real. I wondered the same thing as about the scene with Jamie where he overpowers Bree just to prove the point that she could not have fought back any harder. But then she does have the line with her mom when they're talking. So I'm thinking they're not going to show that because I think that would make Jamie just look really insensitive. Even when I was reading in the book, I thought, what the heck is he doing? He's like traumatizing her. Why is he doing that? But then you realize what his point was, and it was really actually a very smart thing to do. But I think it's similar to the Geneva storyline. They didn't portray that in the TV series as it was in the book, because I think it just would make Jamie appear too insensitive. And maybe I'm the only one, but I'm noticing in that very end of the clip where the people are walking along the water and with the Indians leading them, I'm thinking there's a certain someone in that line. And finally, hashtag what Frank knew. I'm pretty certain he knew Bree went back when she boarded that ship. She paid and she gave her name as Brianna Randall. So I don't see how he could not have figured that out. But really, I think Frank is a douche and a narcissist and an egomaniac. Both the TV show and the book Frank, they really do nothing without thinking that they're going to get something in return. But that's just my opinion. Thanks.
Thanks, Jennifer. Well, at least one of those questions has been answered. We did get a different version. We did get a version of the Jamie, well, a legit scene of Jamie overpowering Brianna to show her that, look, you could not have stopped it. Next up is Joanne W.
Hey there, it's Joanne from Birmingham, Alabama. And I had some quick thoughts on why Roger didn't leave Bree a note at the tavern. First, when the innkeeper says she's still in her room, I think he planned to sit down and wait for her. Second, Bonnet beckons him, and as he walks over, I think Roger believes this will be sort of a quick, hi, how you doing, good to see you, and then he'll sit down and wait for Bree. And then third, when the thugs escort Roger out, I think Roger figured he could probably escape at some point on the way to the ship. So, bottom line, Roger didn't think he would be leaving for a long time and that he'd come back to Bree later in the day. Plus, knowing what a bicycle horn Bonnet is, I don't think he'd let Roger stop to write a note or run upstairs. Just my two cents. Love the podcast and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Joanne. That was funny. Joanne, I definitely buy what you're saying about how he planned to just wait. I think he absolutely would have waited and not, you know, not gone upstairs to freak her out or whatever. I buy that. And then he just didn't get the opportunity he thought he would have. Next up is Linda G.
Happy New Year, Ginger and Summer. Linda G here, San Francisco Bay Area. Leaving feedback for episode 409, The Birds and the Bees. One word, epic. This episode was freaking fantastic. Oh my God. It just had everything that we could have ever wanted in an episode. I love the part, Jamie peeing on the wall, touching Brianna's face, even though he didn't wash his hands. He didn't even know she would be there, for God's sake. Anyhow, the part that really got me was when Claire holding Bree and saying, my baby, that just was more than a tear prick for me. I get emotional just thinking about it and watching it over and over again. I was a happy camper to see Murtaugh at the Ridge, of course, because I love Murtaugh. I'm not going to be too hard on Lizzie. I know with all that she misunderstood, she still was protecting her friend. What normal friends do. Anyhow, it was a great episode. Thank you for the live after show. I love it. I love your thoughts and comments. And as always, I look forward to the next episode. And Shimmer, I'm keeping this under 90 seconds. Thanks. Bye.
Shimmer loves you for that. Next up is Mallory.
Hi, Ginger, and I'm going to be terribly unoriginal and just say Summer. This is Mallory from La Center, Washington. This is my first time calling in, and I don't have, like, a lot to say. I just wanted to point out that when I was watching with my husband, and Jamie and Claire were talking in their bedroom, talking about Brie, and then they got all close and cuddly and sweet, my husband was like, there's that damn flute again. I was like, what do you mean, the damn flute? And he says, it's that flute that always happens when they're about to get busy. And I thought that Ginger would appreciate that.
I do.
So clearly he recognizes the love theme. And then I did actually have feedback about a previous episode. I don't know if that's allowed, but I wanted to note that in terms of the accent of a kid born in America with two British parents, I have good friends who are in that situation. And their kids all sound like Americans, except they say yogurt instead of yogurt. So I think that the anything is totally feasible as a character, not a character trait, but like a linguistic thing. Okay. Anyway, love the show. Can't wait for next week.
Thank you so much, Mallory. Yogurt.
I'm super on board with anyone who is
yogurt
saying that anything is on par with yogurt.
Next up is Martina P.
Happy New Year, everyone. This is Martina calling in from Alaska on episode 409. Holy cow, hands down the best episode of the season. Where to begin if every scene was just perfection? I have to say that I loved the Jamie Brie moment more here than I did in the books. Jamie's reaction was so much better than I could ever imagine. I love how Brianna just fell into Jamie's arms with relief. Poor girl was so exhausted and needed a good cry. The Claire pre-union was equally heartbreaking. Claire's performance was, oh my God, she just blew me away again. Both Ian and Murcha are equally delightful in every scene they are in. I love Murcha being back to his tender ways when he says to Jamie, you have suffered enough pain, lad. Oh God, isn't that the truth? And he is so happy for him. And I love how Jamie is taking every chance he gets to observe his daughter. I adore every time he steals a glance at her. Claire, on the other hand, acts like any concerned mother would. The looks on her face are so believable. And we should never doubt the Outlander casting, shouldn't we? Sophie is looking more and more like she could be Samson Cat's daughter. And giant Lizzie is coming through for us as well. She is a good little actress. There's not one second wasted in this episode. The domestic bliss after the hunt with honey eating straight from the knife. Jamie's regret of having to lose her again. And the Brie and Claire scenes are just so touching and outstanding. All the feels, loved all 62 minutes. My darling, my blessing, be still my heart. The ending was riveting. The waiting game until next episode, that's what I hate. What have you done, Jamie? Here comes trouble.
Thank you, Martina P. As always, vielen, vielen Dank. Next up is Michael M.
Howdy, Ginger. Howdy, Summer. And howdy, fellow members of Team Shimmer. This is Michael from Shawnee, Kansas. Overall, these past two episodes together make the best adaptation yet. Even when you subtract the points for the contents of Brie and Roger's post-coital conflict, Lizzie ties these two episodes together neatly when she tells Brie of her Grange encounter and learning of Claire's performance at the theater the night before. Now I ask, what is in a name? Or rather, what is in the pronunciation of a name? I bring back this debate because of Brianna when she was trying to remember the name of Fergus's wife. Before we get on to how to say her name, I do have a real question to ask. Did Brie simply forget that Leary had mentioned her daughter and had not put two and two together? Or did Brie simply pretend not to be familiar with the name to avoid bringing up her convalescence with the cray-cray hostess? Now back to the contested pronunciation. In 407, Down the Rabbit Hole, and in this episode, I heard a three-syllable version. What the producers of the show had presented to us before was a two-syllable version. Marsley. It rhymes with parsley. Now, with the recent revelation of the three-syllable style, I still hear the emphasis on the first, not the second. I hear Marcelly. What I have not heard is the inflection that Harry met. So the next time we hear that other way of saying the name, just picture Sally in a diner showing Harry how women can fake it.
Michael, you are always entertaining. And I like how you not only have comments on the episode, but you have very specific comments to what Summer and I have said. So that means you are a very good listener. And I also wanted to share that we don't always share this, but it's fresh in my mind. Michael was the winner of our, I wouldn't say really a giveaway. We had a little, I guess, a contest quiz. I mean, like a one little question thing at the end of our last live. Michael won. He just won. And so that calendar went out to you today, Michael. Next up is Rochelle D.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. This is Rochelle D calling from Seattle with feedback on episode 409, Birds and the Bees. I feel like this is the best episode of the season thus far. I usually watch with my girlfriend down the street, but because of the holiday and being out of town, my husband watched with me this time, so that was quite fun. Like Summer, it takes a lot to make me cry. I'm more on the robot side of your scale, but my husband and I are both shedding tears during Jamie and Bree seeing each other, finding each other. I loved how much content was straight from the book. I know Tony Graffi wanted to change the scene, but Meryl fought to keep it from the book. So that's wonderful. And Sophie and Sam didn't rehearse this before filming, which I think is why it was so authentic and wonderful. The only thing I anticipated that didn't happen was Jamie looking for her birthmark, but I didn't feel it was necessary to the scene. The only thing that kind of didn't feel true to the story or to Bree's character was Bree saying that she felt that she was being disloyal to Frank by being there with Jamie. And I felt like all the effort they went to have Frank send her off on this journey, it just didn't feel like those two things matched up for me. Anyways, I love this episode. Can't wait for the next one. And I love nerding out with you guys. Bye.
Thanks so much, Rochelle. We love nerding out with you guys, too. A few people have mentioned our live. In case you are new to our show or just because we don't always mention it here on this show, which we probably should. But in case you're new to our show or are just not familiar with our live, what that means is when the show is on the air, so on TV, new episodes, new seasons, Summer and I do a 1 hour live after show, and it starts 15 minutes after the East Coast premiere. So yes, it's available, the show, not our after show. The new episodes are available at the Stars app, midnight, Sunday, so on the day of the premiere, which is 9 p.m. midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. So a lot of people watch it earlier. And that's great. We think everyone should always watch it as soon as they can. But because the information we have, like because we record early, we get our show notes up, all that, our stuff is embargoed and we can't share until after the episode's over. So we figure watch the episode at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Go get a drink, go get a snack, go to run to the restroom. We give you a quick 15 minutes and then come back and join us live in our Facebook community, and we chat. Well, yes, we do talk, but the stuff that we mostly talk about is stuff that you guys bring up, and that's truly is there. There are other after shows, but there's no other live after show that's so close to when the show ends. So, in case you have not heard of it, that's what our live show is. It's only during the seasons, during new episodes, and it's in our Facebook community, which you can find at outlanderpod.com/group. And our final feedback for episode 409 is from Sandy.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. This is Sandy C. from Oregon with my comments on 409, The Birds and the Bees. Oh my God, what an episode. I don't think there's any chance I could ever get all my comments into 90 seconds. I'm going to do the best I can. To Summer's comment about Bree touching her nose, I noticed that actually a couple times throughout the episode. I think Sophie did a fantastic job of showing PTSD throughout the episode, shutting herself down with Ian and leaving the conversation with Claire to go to bed. She did a wonderful job. I think the change with Roger and Bonnet was great. I mean, let's be honest. Bonnet didn't need Roger there. He didn't need him in the first place. So he was just being a jerk, making him continue the trip.
all the way to Philadelphia. But getting the gems that way was much better than stealing them. The reunion between Brie and Claire was wonderful. Claire's facial reactions alone were just beautiful and just wonderful. I think Sam absolutely killed it. His facial acting was completely on point the entire episode. The meeting with Brie was just perfection, and his looks to her throughout the whole episode, and even his looks when he is talking to Claire and learns about her rape, he just says volumes without actually speaking a single word. And before this episode, it was kind of difficult to see Brie as Jamie's daughter. I mean, she had the red hair and it was fine, but seeing them hunting together, she was looking every bit like Jamie's daughter, and it was so great. Lizzie, she has malaria. Woohoo! Yeah, that sounds so weird, but that's how I feel. I think that's going to be great. And I also think Lizzie's hangry look at Ian saying, oh, so handsome, that's just a portent of things to come with Lizzie. And then I just also noticed that, I don't know if anybody's noticed this or said this, but one of the scenes with Ian, he seemed to be wearing a cuff on his arm that had Indian etchings on it. It was a metal cuff. So I definitely think that there's something there to show how his connection with the Indians, the Cherokee, has gotten so much stronger. And one last thing. I want to say, in regards to what Frank knew, why didn't he tell her? If he knew so much for so long and didn't say a word, then every single thing that he did hurt her and their marriage. That's a very selfish move, in my opinion, and I think that that proves that he was doing things for himself, not just for Claire. So he was feeling very dejected and rejected, and it makes me disappointed in Frank in that regard. I'm Team Shimmer on this one. Claire never chose Jamie over Brie. She only went back when Brie insisted. I have so many other thoughts, but I'm going to leave it at that. Thanks, ladies. Have a great new year.
Thanks, Sandy. You actually make a really good point with regard to, and people have, we've talked about it. It's come up before, but I think it's a good point that when you look at it, you say, okay, what Frank knew. We don't know everything he knew, but we knew he knew a crap ton more than we know at this moment that he knows. Does that make sense? Hopefully one day we'll find out. But whatever he did know, he kept it. You're right. He did not tell her. And that damaged their relationship, damaged their marriage, damaged whatever. So, and you're asking kind of maybe rhetorically, why? And that's a very good question. I think on the one hand, I absolutely think that keeping it from her was selfish. I think it's, I can see how someone could say it's selfish. On the other hand, I wonder if, and I'm happy to be wrong. I'm happy to be right. I mean, I come at this with curiosity rather than trying to pick a side. I am curious, once we know what Frank, exactly what he knew, I'm wondering if that will change a lot of minds. Okay, maybe not about the affairs he had or didn't have, but I think this kind of, keeping this kind of information is much more damaging than having an affair. I mean, in the end, what you don't know doesn't hurt you, but obviously this affected her entire life. But yeah, she wouldn't have left without Brie. I get it. So I don't know that there's so much in that, but I wonder, well, once we find out about Frank, what Frank knew, I wonder if that's going to answer a lot of questions and maybe not make more fans of Frank, but at least make people a little more understanding.
On to the episode discussion for this week, which is episode 410, entitled The Deep Heart's Core. And I want you to know that I wrote this several times.
Me too.
I wrote The Heart's Deep Core.
I wrote Deep in the Heart's Core.
See? Exactly.
This is a difficult title. I was like, wait,
it makes
what?
No sense. My first time through it was The Heart's Deep Core. And then I was like, nope, that's wrong. And I wrote it again. The Deep Heart's Core.
So, before we get started, as always, except for the two times I forgot it, without any shade at the title.
Mm-hmm.
Not the title we just did, but my title. On a tear prick scale of robot to faith.
None.
None?
No. I had a brief moment.
I'm getting it mixed up with the rape one. So sorry. That's where you cried, right?
What?
That's where you had tears.
In what?
409.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm just saying I had moments where I was affected in this last episode, but I was not weeping in any way. But honestly, after this episode aired, when I was watching it with my boyfriend, we had more arguments about our feelings about the actions of certain characters. And I felt like I spent an hour defending people that I don't even like.
Oh, that's hysterical. Was one of them Lizzie?
No, it was just Brie. I don't even like Brie. I don't even like Brie, but I felt like I spent an hour defending her.
I know what I'm – when I said – when you said you didn't have anything and I was like, what? You didn't have anything? I'm getting a mix of – like I am so much – I watched 410 a few times and I took notes, but I am – my heart and my head and the reaction and all the feedback we just got, everything is still with 409, which is the meeting and the reunion with Claire that I – completely forgot that I wasn't asking you about Robot to Faith for that. Man, I had to... Okay, hold on a second. What happened this episode? It's not the reunion. It's after, just after Roberts, the new character. It's just after Roger gets beaten. Okay. Okay, so you didn't have any... You were touched, but you had no... It was no emotion compared to the week before.
No. I had feelings about how upset Brianna was.
Oh, that's what you said. You were affected. You just didn't cry.
Okay. I was affected. I just wasn't like, I wasn't there. But I was affected and I was angry and I had feelings, but it's not the same.
So I was not Faith. I don't even think 409 was Faith, but it's the closest I've ever been to Faith.
Okay, but full disclosure, what did you do during Faith?
I faithed it.
You faked it? What?
Faithed it.
What does that mean? I mean, because during Faith, I was like kind of weeping with like constant tears rolling down my face. What is your version of Faith?
That's what faithing it is.
What did you do?
I just said what you described is what faithing is.
But I feel like if that's what I did, you did more than that.
I did not sob like, uh-huh. I didn't have any body involved. I didn't shake. I had tears like the whole time. So for 410, that's not true. I had tears, but I wasn't, definitely was tear prick, nowhere near. I am like, I'm legit. I'm never a robot. I just can't. I just know that I'm never a zero. I'm not always a Faith, like only, I guess, technically only once. But for 410, a two out of like, if, I mean, I hate to give numbers to it because I was definitely closer to Faith than closer to Robot, but I was affected, as Summer said, but I'm sure I had anger in there too, but as far as like feelings and emotion and tears, it's so funny. It's not funny, but it's so interesting that because I am so, for whatever, right? It's not a right or wrong thing, but good or bad, for better or for worse, that's what I wanted to say. For better or for worse, I am so affected and pulled out of the story. Like, I mean, although yes, I obviously, as we've discussed, I can miss dialogue, but I'm not taken out of the story. Like, wait, what did I just miss? No, I stay in the moment. I stay in the feeling. I stay in the scene. I just may miss certain words. I am so easily affected by Bear's damn music that it starts up and I'm like, oh, love theme. Oh, rich theme, love theme. And I'm like, I'm writing it, or not even, I write it, but I'm thinking it so much that I'm like, every time I'm like, oh my God, it's the rich. You know, it's like, I have freaking tears, not bawling, but I have tears like beyond tear pricks, like tears fall, tears in my eyeballs, if not falling, no sobbing, like on and off the entire episode. It's like, it doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter. I guess it's just every single episode is going to have a tear prick for me because even if the content doesn't make me sad, again, I said this before, seeing our favorite books brought to screen, even adapted, is like, oh my God. So it's just. This episode was written by Luke Shellhaus and directed by David Moore.
Oh my God, did we just hit the title card? I feel like we were like half an hour in.
No, we're an hour in because of feedback.
Oh my God.
But that'll be shorter because it'll be some editing. So the title card, it was a whiskey still over a fire and there are a few drops and then some whiskey pours out. A little whiskey gets poured out.
Now, at first, I was super confused when they posted this because we never mention it really again in the episode, except for when he meets up with Brianna shortly after the title card. And she's like, what happened? And he said, it was an accident at the still. And that was it. Other than that, there was no mention. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little wackadoo. So the music behind the title card, it sounded like it didn't have the same like notes in it. There's a little part of the opening with the banjo, obviously, where you hear, like, I don't know if it's called a trill. When you go on a banjo, it goes da 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 right there. It wasn't those same notes and the same sound, but it was like trying to make vibrato. You know what I mean? It's like back and forth, like striking it or plucking it really quickly. That's, I don't know if that's a trill, whatever it's called in a string instrument. It was on, I'm guessing, on a banjo, because that's what, because it wasn't a violin or a fiddle or anything. But anyway, it sounded like a banjo behind this title card. It was just very interesting. And it made sense because whenever I think about banjo outside of Outlander, obviously, I think of Hillbilly. And when I think of the still, I think of Moonshine. I know it's not Moonshine. It's a lot better than Moonshine. But still, it's like the whole banjo, hillbilly, moonshine. I mean, this is like the roots of hillbilly, right, Summer?
Moonshine in North Carolina? Absolutely.
The 18th century, the original settlers are the, it's where the hillbilly started.
And homemade stills in the mountains. It's purely where moonshine started, clearly.
So Jamie, the episode opens. Jamie is coming back from just having beaten Roger, we think. But he's approaching the cabin. Bree is out front, and we immediately hear Fraser's Ridge theme in with a clarinet. And
does that give it a Frank edge?
It does, I think, because obviously it's Brianna here. But dang, her hair got super curly. So she asks Jamie what happened to his hand, because he had some, like, a cloth wrapped around it or a bandage. And he says, a wee accident, it was still, as Summer said. And she's like, okay. Then he blunders in with, quote, your mom told me what happened. Did you ken the man? And of course, he means the rape. And she says no. And as soon as he says, you should check on the stairs, it's Frank's theme again. So I don't know. Oh, well, he says that, but he goes with her. So they go for a walk. Now, this is what I was referring to earlier and what one of our feedback levers, our levers of feedback, I forgot the name, sorry, was referring to when she said that she wondered if we would get this. I wondered last episode if we were going to get this, and here we are. It like comes super early. They go for a walk. I think the biggest difference, besides obviously being in a cave and around all the pregnant animals, like the actual setting, it's still on the ridge, so that's all that matters. And she's pregnant. He says, don't worry, I will see you married. And she says, I don't want to be married, I love someone else. And she's,
I'm like, already married, biatch.
She's like, he says, oh, the historian. And here I wrote, Bree gives a good face here. She looks lost and desolate. And around this time, or around this part of the scene, lots and lots and lots of clarinet, lots of clarinet. She blames herself. She says, I could have been brave. Okay, so this, what I was saying earlier was the upcoming to this. So this is the scene that we're talking about. She says, I could have been brave. Man. I could have tried harder. Jamie stops and says, you're right. You could have tried harder.
Well, no, he didn't. He didn't shoot for that. That was not his first reaction. He tried to. I felt like he tried to talk her through it. But when she didn't jump onto his guiding her verbally, he's like, the only way she's going to know that what I'm saying is true is to show you, which is 100% book. You know,
which is why he stops and changes his tact.
I love that they kept it because, and which is, it sounds weird to say this because I'm watching this scene happen. I got just a little bit misty, not because he was physically overpowering her, but because the inclusion of it from the book is what made me a little bit misty about it.
So when he says, you're right, you could have tried harder. And then right here, we hear the first notes of the Roger and Bree theme. And I thought, oh, Lord, that's an interesting place to put it. Right before he says, unless, of course, you wanted it.
Ugh, and this comes back, dude.
Pretty much straight from the books, this scene. The look on her face when she says no is like a wall breaks. She's realizing, because he asks her, he overpowers her and he asks her, Could you tell me again? Could you have? And she says, no. She's realizing that she couldn't have stopped him, Bonnet. And she could have been more badly injured or even killed. And right then we get another stinking clarinet. And the beginning notes of the Roger and Bree team. Several times I was not shocked. It was interesting because usually we hear either the theme by itself, even if it's a different instrument or parts of it, or we'll hear the theme, as I've mentioned before, put over the Dance of the Druids, put over the Fraser's Ridge, put over the Jamie and Claire love theme. So far, that's what I've heard, those three combinations. But this was like, he only put like two or three notes. Like you would hear like, da da da, and that's it. Like that's legit it. And I'm like, wait a second, does that make enough? Is that enough for it to be considered the theme? And I argue absolutely, because it is so much. And that she's there. If it were Jamie and Claire talking, well, it still could be them. If it were, you know, like Ian talking to a Mohawk or Ian talking to a Cherokee and you heard da da da, no, it probably wouldn't be. Okay. So you hear the beginning notes of the Roger and Bree theme. I say Roger and Bree and Roger interchangeably, not because one's better, just because it's whatever comes out of my mouth or out of my fingers. And then when she's done and she realizes what Jamie is trying to teach her and she's walking away a little bit, she says, and this is also from the book, it's like, holy crapola. She asks him, did you fight back against Jack Randall? Wowza. He's like, oh, so I guess you know that.
There was no indication that Claire ever told her about that interaction, so that must have been a little bit awkward for Jamie.
Jamie says, I gave my word not to fight for your mother's life. I would do the same again. Now, here is where it differs. He tells her that he did kill him at Culloden. That's the biggest, besides the location and some slight variation. That is the biggest difference, I think, between the book scene and the adaptation scene. Because, of course, in the book, we didn't get. Yes, we got Jamie in book three waking up with BJR on top of him, dead on the battlefield of Culloden. But he doesn't remember what happened. Of course, we got that. We got the scene, the final scene with BJR in episode one of season three. So this information is known to him now. He did not like have a blackout like he did in the books. So he can say, yes, I killed him. She says, you don't think my honor is worth trying to get back? And she says,
that was the brutal. That
was brutal. I think it was more brutal in the books. And she says about Bonnet, I keep thinking if he were dead, maybe I could forget. Again, we get the Roger and Bree theme. And then that's the last note I took on this scene. Does Jamie tell her that killing him won't solve anything?
I don't recall those words. He was not on board with her murdering her assaulter.
So we are immediately taken to Roger and the Mohawk, whom we come to find out are the Mohawk. He is he's tied up with rope, but the rope is connected to a horse. And he is walking along the back of the caravan of horses, more maybe toward the middle back. And there's another prisoner with him who is also tied up, and he falls. And Roger tries to help him up, and he's beaten for it. The music here is, as one might expect, a lot of dissonance.
Did you think at first that was going to be the priest?
I thought, I was like, oh, Lord, they're doing that? Because here's the thing. Well, we won't say anything more about the priest. I don't think it's a big spoiler just to say there's a priest, but without saying what happens. Yeah, I thought, holy crap, is that the priest? And then I thought, oh, well, that would make it a lot quicker. I mean, you know, without having to draw things out with someone being here, someone else coming, you know what I mean? I thought that could easily like get us to the place and take care of it right away, you know? But yeah, I did think that. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I did not write that down. So around the fire. So Roger, when they stop for the night, the two prisoners are tied up to trees. And I think they're on the same tree, as long as we have two. When once he's dead, it's only one. So around the fire, before we get to the prisoners, the Mohawk are telling, they have a few subtitles. And it's about Sky Woman and her twins she has. And I'm like, you know, let me look this up. And sure enough, and they didn't finish it. They like started it and the camera goes off to Roger, which we all appreciate. But what this is the Haudenosaunee creation story. Of course, that's the Iroquois. And one of the Iroquois nations is the Mohawk. So what we did was, I will share these links in our show notes, but we reached out. If hopefully you've had a chance to listen to our interview with Toa Honde and Rebecca Ingram. He is a member of the Mohawk community, and she's married to him, but she's also a geolinguist. She's a linguist working on her PhD. The episode and interview, I am most happy that we have done, I will say. And anyway, I can share that and link to that interview as well. But Rebecca shared with us some links. One is to a link on Spotify. So it's narrated. It's the Haudenosaunee creation story. And then we have a link that will take you to the creation story that's written out. And then she said, this one is beautifully illustrated and comes from Toa Honde's home territory. Oh, I hope I don't butcher this. Of Kainteke. I hope I didn't do that too badly. Anyway, we have three links. We will share them all with you. And basically all we get is, there was Sky Woman. She had twins. One was Flint and one was Sapling. Sapling created everything that was good, and Flint created everything that was bad. And it's just at that point that the camera goes over to Roger, and I was like, wait, you can't do this. You can't tell us a story and then stop. And then I stopped the show and I went to Google it, and sure enough, I'm like, right? So it is the Mohawk creation story. It's a perfect, perfect timing. They don't really give it to us, but they give us enough of it so that if you looked up Sky Woman and Sapling and Flint and Mohawk, you would be taken right to it. So I will not read those, but I will share all of those. So thank you so much, Rebecca and Toa Honde, for the links. So meanwhile, when the camera leaves the fire pit, Roger and his other prisoner are tied around a tree, tied to a tree on a Tuesday. Because Roger knows what day it is still. He is tying knots. Now, this part is definitely from the book. He uses a piece of string or a piece of cloth, and he ties knots to keep track of days. He is tying knots in a cord to know how long it takes to get to their intended destination, so he knows approximately how long it will take to get back. He's also tracking direction and speed. He says he has to do this. He can't die like this. Not here, not now. And I'm going to get back to my wife. That was hard to watch. Him bubbling up was hard to watch.
I was more concerned with his face.
Well, that was why it was hard to watch. Jamie did a damn job on his face.
He did. And it was interesting to watch it heal over the course of the episode. Because the first time he showed up, I was like, oh, he can see. At least he can see. Because having watched Bird Box on Netflix over the last couple of weeks, I'm like, well, at least you could see, because, you know, in Bird Box, that lady, and by that lady, I mean Sandra Bullock, got on a boat, put it on the river, and everyone had blindfolds, and they just rode the rapids down a river.
That was freaky enough. And if you haven't seen Bird Box, go do it if you would like a suspense film. But also, the book is much more suspenseful, if you can believe it. So I read the book and I didn't even know they were making a film. And then I heard about it and I was like, wait, what?
Well, what was confusing? Here's what's confusing. And then I'm going to go off on a tiny Bird Box tangent.
Very tiny.
I watched Bird Box on Netflix, and they had a whole conversation, Sandra Bullock's character and another character, about how she was from Sacramento and dude was from Stockton. And I was like, wait, does this whole series take place in Northern California? But when I went back and read the Wikipedia entry about the series, they were like, no, this book takes place in like Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know why they would choose Northern California. It's odd. I recognized it. I heard it in the movie as well, but I did not remember it from the book. So, well, that would make sense since it wasn't in the book. Then we're taken to the cabin. Claire is giving... This is another conversation. I mean, I'm glad. I think it was important. I think it was important for them to include it. So this is another conversation straight from the book. Claire is telling, as a doctor and her mother, telling Brianna about her options for as far as her pregnancy goes.
Were they really options, though? Those were terrible.
Well, the options are keeping it or attempting to end it. She tells her the risks, but wants to make sure that she has the option. So here, if I'm not mistaken, she's still approximately 2 months pregnant, right? Because we find that out last episode, and this is like around the next day. So Claire says, because Brianna said, did you ever think about, have thoughts about getting rid of me? And Claire says, my situation was much different. You were wanted. I loved your father. And we both wanted you.
And we knew who you belonged to.
Oh, Lord. Bree said, asks, is there a possibility with the whole withdrawal method thing? Is there even a possibility that it could be Rogers? And she says, well, yes. And here we get hints of the Roger and Bree theme behind this.
But to be honest, that was the moment from the books that was sadly lacking from the last episode, where Claire is having a whole conversation with Bree where they're talking about the withdrawal method. And Claire very snarkily says, you know what they call people who use the withdrawal method as their method? And Claire says, parents. So it's that snarky Diana Gabaldon moment where she makes a statement about botched contraception.
If you want, she says, if you want to keep the baby and go back to Roger, you have to go now. We know you can go through pregnant because I did. But if the baby's born and you try to go through, that baby might go somewhere else. I'm like, that's horrifying to think about.
It is. But wasn't that also like choice ever? Because she's like,
oh, my goodness.
She's like, OK, I can potentially remove the child from your womb, but it'll have to be surgical. And I don't have anesthesia, which means I'm just going to have to cut you open and hope that I get it all.
Well, I mean, yeah. And also all I have is whiskey. Yeah.
Right. That was like the worst, like, abortion.
So she says, no matter what I choose, I have to choose now. And Claire's all, uh-huh. And we get more Roger and Bree theme. We get more theme. She walks up, the next scene, she walks up to the cabin. Jamie is working on the wood. And Ian offers to help her with chores. Oh my gosh. I love her outfit. She's like a mini Claire right here. I love it. And Ian like takes the buckets from her. And Jamie says, he's smitten with you, lass. And they look over at Claire in the garden. And Jamie says, she'd grow roots here if she could. And Brianna does a double take and says, my father said that too. So Frank said that too. And I think they kept it, didn't they?
They did.
And she says, I came here to find you too. And then a slow transition into the ridge theme. And we get another da 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 day in the life on the ridge.
But did you not notice the few times where they played the ridge theme and it was like melancholy on a weird woodwind?
This one, this one may have been too. But everyone is helping out on the farm. It's just... And then, you know, we get the white sow. That little goat is adorable. And Bree, and we get a scene or a flash of Bree and Ian and Lizzie meeting with some Cherokee. And I'm guessing they're trading. They kind of hold things out. So maybe trading. At dinner, the ridge theme, they're all, of course, smiling and laughing and blah, blah, blah. And the ridge theme is huge, huge. But, yes, time has gone by, but not more than a week. Because later on, when they talk about Roger being taken, he said it was, they have a week on us. So it's only been a week, but it seems like a lot more. However, okay, it's only been a week, but Brianna goes from approximately to maybe now 9 weeks, 8 to 9 weeks pregnant, and to the scene where Brie and Claire are hanging up laundry. And because of what she's wearing, I'm like, is she suddenly showing? She wasn't big at all. But the way that she was dressed from one scene to the next, she looked like she grew. And I was like, and just in the tummy, I was like, really? How? If they only have a week head start. So it must have not been.
She had very close to the same clothing on for the entire episode. If anything, they may have just made one of the waistcoats that she was wearing look real tight. But that's as far as I'll go with that.
So they play Claire and Bree. Play their What We Miss from the 20th Century game. So that was funny.
What would you miss? Think about it. If you had nothing, what would you miss? Beyond burgers? What?
I would give up indoor plumbing forever if I could keep modern medicine. What about you?
I would like working toilets.
More than modern medicine?
Yeah. Because if you wash your hands and keep clean, you have as much of a guarantee as modern medicine as you do. There are people every year that get the flu who had flu shots and whatnot.
We're not only talking the flu. We're talking like surgery and...
Yeah, but I can wash my hands. My whole point is if I can't poop someplace away from my house, if I can't poop away from my house, I can't get away from it.
It's away from your house. You go poop outside. That's actually more hygienic than pooping inside and flushing. Well, flushing it is convenient. That's what it is. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to have to poo in a bucket either.
I've done it. It's not fun.
So that night, Bree has a nightmare. The Roger and Bree theme is playing, and Roger is sitting on the end of her bed, and she wakes up and says, "Oh, Roger, I'm pregnant, but it may not be yours." But then, or maybe she doesn't say "may not be yours." I think she just says, "I'm pregnant." And then as he turns and she clasps him, the camera goes around the other side, and we see Bonnet, who says, "I always wanted to be a father."
Dude, how quickly did you realize this was a dream? And by dream, I mean nightmare.
Well, as soon as we saw Roger, I knew it was... Come on now.
I mean,
that was pretty scary, though. He, like, started to almost, like, do it again.
Of course he did. And then she had the whole crying out for Lizzie to help her and Lizzie sleeping through it. So it was not a reminiscence, because reminiscing implies that it was like joyful, like you're like, "Haha, that was nice," but that's not what happened. But it was like a full recall of the experience of begging for someone to help her and no one helping her.
Well, once she comes to and Lizzie is with her, she kind of calms down and they start to talk, and Lizzie gives herself away. I mean, she legit gives herself away in just a few moments, but she says about the nightmare, "It was the man who..." And Bree says, "You know then?" And Lizzie goes straight into the protective mode. "He cannot hurt you now, mistress. No, he will not. I can promise that." "Wait, huh? But what?" And she continues, "He was here. I saw him on the road. I told your dad who it was and what he'd done. Your dad beat him, nearly beat him to death. He did. And he and Ian sent him away. He cannot hurt you again." And Bree's asking her, like, "How do you know what he looks like?" And she says, "I saw him. He grabbed you and he ran after you. And Bree asks, "Lizzie, who do you think did this to me?" And the next thing we see is she, in her shift with a shawl, bursts into the cabin where they're serving breakfast. And she says, "Where is Roger? What did you do to him?"
But I feel like her bursting into that cabin was almost delayed too much. Because there was like a little bit of cabin conversation that went down between her going, "Who do you think hurt me?" and her bursting into the cabin being like, "What have you done?" I feel like there was a little too much time.
So as soon as she bursts in and says that, everyone looks at Jamie's hand.
Right?
And Murtaugh says, "I think I'll wait outside." And he nods kind of toward young Ian. And Brianna's like, "No, you sit your arse down."
Right.
So Claire is worried now too. She's like, "What is this?" Now Jamie, to his credit, does not deny anything. He says, "I beat him, but if it was your historian, I didn't know." Brianna says, "Lizzie was wrong. He did bed me, but we were handfast." And then Jamie turns. Jamie's now pissed and shocked and ashamed for what he's done. He's like, "I did this trying to defend your virtue. You claim to be violated."
He's only upset because he misinterpreted her statement being like, "You told me that you were violated, but you're really just a whore." And we're like, whoa.
Exactly.
Whoa.
She slaps him and he deserves it.
But can we talk about the slapping? I feel like the slapping went a little overboard in this episode.
Oh, because it was two of them?
Especially the Ian slap. Because that seemed almost dumb. I think it would have been more impactful if she'd punched him. Because she literally, if you slap somebody, Ian. And I'll tell you why. Because slapping somebody who is within arm's reach of you is effective. Because you're there. But crossing the room, like taking 10 steps to a dude who's across the room and then slapping them, almost seems like overkill.
That's a lot.
right? I'm just like, I feel like she should have either stayed where she was and just screamed at him or gone that far and like done something else. But like slapping him after she already slapped Jamie just felt like, meh.
Like a Susie one note or something like that. It was the same thing done twice, and it seemed a little almost like a almost overdone. So she slaps him and he deserves it. It says you beat up the wrong man. And then the camera is on Lizzie. And I wrote, you own this girl.
It had to do with before the whole dream happened when they're having the montage session of them all eating dinner together. And at a point in the middle of the dinner, I don't know if you noticed this, but Jamie or somebody passed a plate of mashed potatoes to Jamie. Jamie then started to pass a plate or the same bowl of mashed potatoes to Bree. And then as she grabbed it from him, he pulled it back from her in a joking like, no, you can't have that. But then what Brianna pulled out of his hand was a plate with mashed potatoes on it.
That's what you're talking about.
And then she set down a bowl of mashed potatoes. It was continuity. It was weird.
So after Jamie realizes, oh my gosh, I've done this, he says, is it true? And then he says, I'm sorry, Les, I'll make it right. And Bree goes forward and forward and forward. She goes, my father would never have said the things you said to me. He was a good man. You're nothing but a savage. Young Ian then comes in with, then who was it? Who attacked you? Bree nods to Claire, who looks at her, and she gives her in silent permission, who then puts the ring on the table. She says, it was him. And then we hear, where the hell is Roger? And the Roger and Bree theme begins. Roger is with the Mohawk. Ian says, I sold him to the Mohawk. And then she slaps him too. Quote, I thought he violated you, cousin. And Bree replies, this made me laugh. And I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be laughing at this type of scene. But he says, all serious, I thought he violated you, cousin. And she's like, yeah, I understand. Thanks.
Right. I get it. Thanks.
I get it. Lizzie, I thought the only person that was missing, Lizzie should have been slapped. Out of all of it.
But conversely, I feel super bad for her because she was trying to do the right thing by all the people.
So was Jamie. So was Ian.
But there's a difference because she saw the things that she physically saw and she thought she understood the things to be true based upon what she saw and what came out of Brianna's mouth. She saw Roger drag Brianna out of the sightline of that window.
Correct, but the assumptions she drew were wrong, and if she hadn't shared those assumptions...
But why were they wrong? They were wrong because Brianna never filled her in, and she said, I don't want to talk about it, Lizzie, go to sleep.
I don't disagree, but it doesn't matter. In the end, she was wrong. She had no way of being right.
Everyone should have taken a little bit more time to find out more about
what
they agreed, or what they... thought, but I feel like the series has made Lizzie a much more sympathetic character.
Well, yeah, because we see what she sees exactly. And not just that, like you said, we get Bree. She does try to at least attempt conversation a number of times, and Bree's like, leave it, Lizzie. I'm tired. Go to sleep, Lizzie. So yeah, she does try. And while we understand Brianna's reception, we understand that she doesn't want to talk about it. She was just assaulted. I get it. In her defense, Lizzie did try to communicate with her. And so if you don't tell someone something, they make assumptions. They will have to fill in blanks that they try to make sense of things. So Bree, after Jamie knocks over some dishes and furniture, says, no, no, you do not get to be more angry than me. And then she is finally, I thought, transformed into warrior Brianna. Now, she says, how do we get Roger back? Where do the Mohawk live? That's a little bit of a problem. They're 700 miles north in upstate New York. Now, that's a difference from the book, if I'm not mistaken. It may not be. In the show, the Mohawk are still traveling. They're not home yet. They're not in their village. There are three episodes left. There's a whole heck of a lot. if they move things along like they did in the last episode, especially 409, they can get it done. I mean, they're going to get it done. They're already done filming and editing, so it will be done. So I have faith they will get there. I'm just wondering like how this, because in the book, if I'm not mistaken, when they took her to, and that'll save some time too. When they took her to Cross Creek, it was about a 6-week journey one way. And I think in the TV show, they said it was about 6 or 7 weeks. So it's not too far off. They said, or Claire said, that them going and coming back, she may not be in time for the baby. And if she's just over 2 months, let's just say she's still two months and a week, whatever, then that's 7 months, right? So half of that is 3.5 months. That's a lot longer than 6 weeks. That's 12 weeks to get there. Am I wrong? No, it's 12 weeks to get there and 12 weeks to get back. So they're going to be gone for more than 6 months is what they're saying. And she may not make it back in time. So that is a big difference as far as the distance. That's why I remember Bree being further along when she was dropped off at River Run. We are then taken to Roger, and it's in the morning. He's getting up to leave on the next day of walking, and his co-captor is dead. And they leave. Well, they do take him off the tree and they drag him away. We don't find out what happens to him, but I assume they leave him. He had a bloody head. Did they kill him, you think?
No, I didn't think so. To me, it seemed like they took care of him as best they could and he just died in the middle of the night.
They definitely tried to move faster because Roger, whether it's the new speed or just the fact that he's been doing it for longer now, which I buy both of them, they go even faster and he stumbles. He's the one stumbling now. So I love the music we're getting. We're getting like Native American influenced music, I guess you could call it. And then we get the Roger and Bree theme before it goes back to Brianna and family. They're outside around a campfire. That was interesting. And she asks, will they kill him? And Ian says, I don't think so. So I thought this was, okay. They're setting, can't even say that. Let's just put it this way. The line I'm going to share, which we've already heard, it's not a spoiler, is introduced super early in the show as compared to the book. And I'll just say it out without any explanation. And Summer, we can't say anything more. But this piece of information is a lot earlier in the show than the book. Ian says, it said they adopt folk, the Mohawk, into their tribe in order to replace those that are killed or die of sickness. So at this moment, Ian is just sharing information, trying to keep everyone's hopes up, but especially Brianna's hopes up that he won't be killed as long as he's of value to them. And then Ian says, he holds up his necklace. When I gave him to them, they gave me this. And she also says that you sold him. And he's like, well, in a way, I guess, yes. or she says, that was your price. Oh, Lord have mercy. I get it. She deserves to say whatever she wants to say. In planning his rescue, Bree insists that they all go. The Mohawk are already a week ahead and they have to leave soon. Oh, sorry, I was wrong. So they're saying there and back is 4 months' time or more. Claire is worried they won't be back. So if it's 4 months' time, she was 2 months pregnant. It's been a week. She's 9. Even if you say 10 weeks pregnant, then she's got 2 months would be 7 at the least 6.5 months. And it's 4 months there and back, there's plenty of time unless obviously something happens, but whatever. I'm not going to do math. So Claire asks, have you made your decision? And Bree says she's keeping the baby. And of course, we hear the Roger and Bree theme. And she says, not just for him, but for me too. Claire promises to help her and she's to help her with the baby. And Bree's like, no, you are going with them. She says he will run when he sees these two. He needs the face of someone who he knows and trusts. And then, of course, Mama, he's going to need a doctor. So she's making all the sense here. There's no ifs about that. Claire won't allow her to stay on the ridge alone with Lizzie. Well, that makes sense. And Jamie says that, we can take him to River Run and they can stay with his Aunt Jocasta. But it's in the wrong direction. So I don't know if that's a difference from the book or it's just it didn't matter because there was no Murtaugh. So they had to go. Either way, it doesn't matter. But here it's convenient because they can get on the road and Murtaugh gets to go meet Jocasta. Jamie says he'll write a letter to Jocasta explaining everything.
And Brianna says, and you're going to bring him back to me. Now, in the books, doesn't Jamie say, because the whole posse, minus Murtaugh, takes her to more. Yeah, I'm sure about this point, a much more heavily. She's not 8 months pregnant yet, but I think she's around 5 or 6. A much more heavily pregnant Brianna to River Run. And leave her and drop her off and have her stay there with Jocasta.
I don't think she did. I think she got steadily more pregnant over the time she was there.
Well, as soon as she showed up, well, I don't want to say much more because I don't want to spoil stuff, even though it's not a huge change. I don't want to spoil anything. So anyway, in the book, when they drop her off, it's the whole posse minus Murtaugh. Now, didn't he say to Brianna, if I don't find him, I will not return?
I don't recall him saying that. But what I did notice in this episode was that there has been a lot of production comments stating that Murtaugh was not taking over for Duncan Innes. However, in this episode, it felt very much like he was perhaps the stand-in for Duncan Innes, right?
I did not get a Duncan. No.
With the way he was talking to Jocasta? You didn't feel like that was a little flirtatious?
Duncan was not flirtatious.
Well, Murtaugh was, and it felt flirtatious between the two of them because she was like, you know, you only had eyes for my sister. You were all up in her business. But it also felt like he was kind of flirting with her.
As Jamie tells Claire, you told me he'd gone back, meaning Robert. Here's that Robert again. Who's Robert? You told me he'd gone back, meaning Roger. How was I? Because he's like still beating a dead horse. It's like, give it up, Jamie. It's done now.
Well, he did a real bad thing. And he feels real bad about it.
And he should.
He's going to keep reliving it until he fixes it.
And he's trying to like mentally go through like, how could this have happened? So first of all, he has the eyewitness testimony of Lizzie. And then couple that with, he's right, Brianna. I think Brianna told Claire and then Claire told Jamie that Roger had gone back because, again, and I think we even said this in the book when we had this discussion, it's all about assumptions. What does assuming happen? It makes an ass out of you and me. We had this exact discussion. So I get it. I do get it. He was like, how was I supposed to know? And then we have the Jamie and Claire love theme here. Claire ends. He's like, you told me he'd gone back. How was I supposed to know? And Claire's still pissed at him. She goes, you told me you hit a tree. And she walks away.
Seriously. She's not wrong.
No.
He totally said that. And that's what's so hard. It's like, what would she have preferred? When you think about it, if let's just say if the Roger character that had been beaten, sold to the Mohawk, was in fact Bonnet, what would we all have preferred? What would she have preferred?
Everyone would have preferred that it was Bonnet.
No, I'm not saying that we would not have preferred that it was Bonnet. But what I'm stating is that would she have preferred that Jamie said, I just beat at a Bonnet and I sold him to the Mohawk?
Sure, who cares?
Or would she have preferred to not know and not have the information and just be like blissfully ignorant of what happened and have him just say, I hit a tree? Because it's the same. It's the same for Jamie, because he's like,
Jamie thinks he
has
the dude. That's why it's the same.
Right. But for in Jamie's mind, while it was not physically actually Bonnet, it was Bonnet.
Well, no, it was the man who violated her daughter. Correct.
Who was actually Bonnet. So in Jamie's mind, he got rid of the
perpetrator. That's what he did.
Agreed.
So we're back with Roger. He's still knotting it up and he's still able to keep his sense of humor. As he's untied the next morning or one morning, he says, let me guess, my carriage awaits. And it's time for them to be on the move again. And then back on the ridge, we get the Roger and Bree theme. Claire says she may not make it to River Run before the baby is born, but Brianna will be well taken care of. Brianna also made a likeness of Roger. So this is what I wrote. Lizzie has malaria and Bree is an artist. Praise the goddess.
I know, but I almost felt like her drawing that was almost...
It was a throwaway. It wasn't. It didn't mean anything.
That's what I'm saying. It was a throwaway
because Jamie knew what he looked like, right?
Well, I guess. Yeah, but if it wasn't about Jamie, it was to show others and say, "Have you seen this man?" And trying to describe someone and showing them an image is different.
I got it, but they have made no mention to Bree's artistic abilities before now, so it just kind of felt like meh.
It was like, it was good. It's not even worth commenting further on. I was just like happy that finally we get Bree the artist, but dude, it's like I don't even know what to say about that. That's it. Bree tells Claire to tell him, Roger, everything. She says, he came back for me, but this baby may not be his, and he deserves to know that. Ian is fingering his necklace, and then he rushes up to Brianna.
Don't ever say that again.
Cousin, for my part in this calamity, if we don't find him, it would be my honor to take your hand in the holy sacrament of marriage. And Jamie says, get off your knee, idiot.
Oh, I know. What made me laugh about this was from the books, he's the one who convinced Ian to propose to her.
I know. That's funny.
In the books, which is why I was kind of like,
that's funny.
It was a funny adaptation. I enjoyed it.
Bree can't look at Jamie in the eye as he says, I will find him, lass. I will not rest until I do. You have my word. And then she looks at him and she says, I'll hold you to that vow. We get a little bit of the rich theme as Lizzie promises to take care of Bree. Oh, and then, wow. Thank God Brianna, Jamie didn't hear this. Good Lord. This is the harshest thing she said. Brianna now is regretting ever telling her mom to have left her. She says, Mom, I am so sorry, Mom, for making you leave me. Wow. And as they leave in separate ways, the Jamie and Claire love theme plays. Back with Roger. Oh, the drums that we heard before are now over the Roger and Bree theme. It's a lovely effect. One of the Mohawk offers Roger some water and then takes it away when he thinks he's drinking too deeply. Or maybe he just wants to keep it.
I mean, it's a little bit of both, but I mean, it was kind of him to offer him water at all.
Oh, 100%. So do you think, I mean, in the end, we know that he ran, right? But do you think when he fell
off... He ran, but I don't think he would have ran if he hadn't fallen off that cliff.
That's what my question was.
In the way that they played off the adaptation, I don't think that had he not fallen down that cliff, I don't think he would have run.
I don't think so either, because he was like... He didn't say help me, but he was screaming for help.
Well, but there were so many of them. And he was just one person. So I don't see him. Now, while he was looking for opportunities the whole time, I don't think he would have run and tried to create his own opportunity. So that's
what I thought. So we agree that he legitimately falls here. He's stumbling and it's so bad. Like they're trying to pull him up and he's like screaming because like he could have literally lost his hand. It could have been like.
It was
pulled off.
Like, that's the worst. Like, think about it. If you had to be held aloft on a single limb or a joint or anything, I'm like, your hand, it just, especially that particular joint at your wrist has no, like, staying power to it. Like, that particular joint is not known for its
holding your
ability.
Weight.
Yeah.
So he almost loses a hand, but he's able to loosen the rope and fall the rest of the way. Now, I think that part was on purpose. I mean, he was trying to save his hand and he was in pain, but at that point he was like, get the rope off of me so I don't lose my hand and hunky dory, I might be able to get away. And then he begins to run as further proof. As they show his feet as he's running, I keep expecting him to lose a shoe because it could still happen. But
like Cinderella?
In the book, he loses a shoe and then he injures his foot. Back at River Run, Myrta and Bree arrive at River Run to the tune of the Roger and Bree theme.
This whole scene when Ulysses takes them in to see
that
Jocasta.
Was funny.
I loved every moment of this because Jocasta's like, what does the letter say? And then Brianna's like, full disclosure, I'm super pregnant. I'm going to get more pregnant. I'm not married. And, you know,
this might help hurt your rep.
Right. The dude who impregnated me may or may not survive whatever trial he's been set to. So
he might be dead.
So I know that I'm clearly not the great niece you anticipated or hoped for. However, this is how it's going. Is that about right, Ulysses? And he's like, that's about right.
So Ulysses greets them and Murta turns over Jamie's letter. They're taken in to see her and then Murta takes over. And I love that we get such mention of Ellen and how much Murta loved her. Then he introduces Brianna, Jamie and Claire's daughter, of course, and Bree takes over then, dictating from the letter. Jocasta welcomes them. And that's all we get there. Then we go to Roger. He closes out the episode. He runs and runs and runs and runs and runs and runs and runs until he runs into a cluster of standing stones. There's no hedgerow like the book, which who cares? But it's gorgeous the way that they do it. And of course, these are the standing stones from episode 401, right?
I think so.
So how did he know? How did we know it was there? Before they even showed it, we heard it. They did the humming. All the bees humming, because that's directly from the book, even though they didn't do it in season one. It was directly from the book. I think they had it not for Brianna, but I think they had it for Roger when he goes back, when Fiona's right there. I think we hear, I remember I've made this comment already this season before, so I was very happy to have the humming, the bees. He says when he sees it, he's like, he has so many reactions. First, he's like, what the F? These are stones. Because he hears them and he's like, oh my gosh. And he says, oh my God. And he walks to them. The druid theme plays. Of course, you know it's going to be the druid theme. And he is just not able to handle it. This is his get out of jail free card. He is going through all the feels.
No, and he pulls the gemstones out of his little pouch. And he's just staring at it like, and he just starts weeping because he's like, is this the only choice I have?
He's like, what do I do? This may be the only time I get this choice.
This may be the only choice I have to not die.
This may be my only way I don't die. And even if I did survive, this might be my only chance to get back to my time ever. And as Summer said, he just starts to openly weep. And that was scutting. And this is his way home. He is so torn. He shows us how torn he is. We can just feel it. And to find it now of all times without Brianna.
So in the books, he stumbled upon the Circle of Stones in sort of like a cave. Like it was like a depression. Where he like climbed through something
and it was like cave, but it was a big, it's.
But there were rock walls. Like he had to be like fished out of it. Like it was right. Like it was like a deep.
Oh, it's not. It wasn't any kind of. He was not crawling into caves or anything.
No, but they fished him out of it. Like literally, they sent a rope down to pull him out of it.
Well, that was over a ledge. That wasn't out of a, or maybe over a stone, over the stone. So he walks closer to the stones and he puts, and I knew as soon as I saw the stones, I'm like, they're gonna end it right here.
I had a moment where I thought for sure there was gonna be a mohawk dude who pulled him away from it and or hit him over the head and pulled him away from it.
Oh, that's just like Claire, that would have been interesting.
Just like Claire got pulled away from the stones that episode where she almost went through to Frank because they heard each other screaming at each other and then all of a sudden she was dragged away by the redcoats.
Okay, hold on a second. That could still happen. This episode ended with him.
I think that might be how they open it.
This episode ended with him putting his hand up and you heard the, you hear the humming is like larger now, louder. But as he gets close to it and his hand goes up, like we even hear screaming. Now, is that the first time we've heard that? I never remember hearing screaming.
I didn't hear the screaming.
I heard screams. So
I'll have to watch it again.
The episode, and it goes to black. The episode ends with him putting his hand up, not quite touching the stones, but almost. And Summer is right. Like it could have ended like the way it did. It could have ended with him not going through or trying to go through, but getting hit over the head. There's a few ways it could have ended, but it actually still could end the way Summer just said, because they end it like this. And all it takes is the next episode. He falls down faint because he's been hit over the head. So yeah. So what I'm wondering, and I don't think this is a spoiler. It's not a spoiler because it hasn't happened so far and it doesn't change. All it does is, no, I don't think it's a spoiler. So I wonder if, because we weren't shown yet, unless it was there and I totally missed it. Now I need to go watch it again. I wonder if they're going to keep the thing from the book in that the glyph on the opal that Claire found matches a glyph on the stones. Roger doesn't know that.
But here's the thing. The way that Roger found the stones in the book, it was different, but there was also, it was like almost a, like a, the circle of stones was in sort of a depression of a cave with an open top. So he fell down into it and they had to fish him out of it. So the cave glyphs were on the walls of the cave. So surrounding the standing circle of stones, there was like a cave wall. Like there was no roof. So I don't know if it could be technically be a cave, but there were stone walls, even though there was like a giant sky roof, right? Skylight. So I don't know. I feel like it was a primitive cave where he found the circle of stones, even though there it was not a cave in the sense that there was that it was underground. It was just surrounded on all sides. He happened upon it by like ducking through
a hedgerow.
Foliage. Yeah.
A hedgerow. Yeah. He got stuck in it. And he dove into it purposefully to escape them. And then he realized, he's like, I'm going to be here and be still because they're walking around until dark. And when it was dark and it was safe to move, he realized he was stuck. So he had to crawl. He couldn't go backwards. He could only crawl forwards. He kept crawling forward until he could find a place where he could actually stand up or sit up. And when he finally could, he's crawling and he smacks into the stone with his head. And then he finds his way out, not out of the hedgerow. Once he hits the stone, he's like, oh, well, this might be a place I can get out. He can get out there. And then he discovers, oh my gosh, this is what it is. He sees the design, whatever. And after he sees it and goes through all the feelings that he's going through now, yes, he is then recaptured. So that's it. That was 410.
All right. Join us next week when we will be discussing episode 411 entitled, If Not for Hope.
I hope to the great God above that in 411, if Jocasta's machinations, which are happening, I'm hoping that what stuff happens in the books around the machinations also pops up. That's all I'm going to say, because that was freak-donk-ridiculous. I will like be so happy. You don't even know. Okay, so thank you guys so much for joining us. Woo! That was another doozy of an episode. Not as hard emotionally, obviously, to get through as 408 or 409. Oh, 409, 408 was hard. 409 was beautiful, but emotional. We appreciate you guys listening. We appreciate all of our supporters on Patreon. If you like our show and are entertained by it, we invite you to take a peek over at Patreon at patreon.com/outlanderpod. There are still a few seats left. They're not seats. A few spots left on our tour of Scotland, our Outlander themed tour of Scotland, Pod Abroad 2019. Oh my gosh, Summer, that's like now months away. Holy crap. A few spots left. You can find out all about that at podabroad.com. And finally, where all the magic happens, come join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.